It's said that the shuffling of the cards is the earth, and the pattering of the cards is the rain, and the beating of the cards is the wind, and the pointing of the cards is the fire. That's the four suits. But the greater trumps, it's said, are the meaning of all process and the measure of the everlasting dance. Charles Williams. Ever since we have begun experiencing and perceiving our lives in symbolic terms, humans have looked for signs scattered throughout nature and the cosmos to help make sense of the world and to assist in explaining why certain phenomenon is happening. And as we sought deeper meanings behind the witnessed patterns in our environment, new symbols were designed to accommodate the new ideas and to explain a larger order. Symbols that would help us get closer to the divine and further unravel the mysteries that were being hidden. Rituals were developed and devices used not only to make sense of the present, but to also determine the future. And no other device has been as influential or has caught the imagination quite like tarot cards. Hello and welcome from Gambling to Divinity, the History of the Tarot. My name is Stephen, and I'll be your guide through this historical journey. For this introductory episode, I would like to outline the goals of the podcast, the general terms and ideas, and present the main question this podcast hopes to answer. On the onset, I would like to be clear that this podcast does not aim to prove or disprove the divinity of tarot cards. Whether or not you believe the cards are a connection to the supernatural or offer a spiritual guide is entirely up to you. Nor will I cover how to read the cards. While we'll explore the major arcana, their interpretation, and their changes throughout the century, there will not be a guide presented. The main goal of the podcast is to place tarot cards into their historical context, from the uses as playing cards, as allegory to teach children about Greek gods, to alchemical representations, to being used as political tools through sonnets, religious and social uprisings, and of course to use in cartomancy. However, if you'd like to follow the podcast on social media, I'll be posting lessons on the tarot, breaking down certain aspects to make it easier for beginners who would like to learn more about how to read the cards. Follow in the links below. There is a rich and fascinating history behind tarot cards. From the early development from dice in ancient China to the astrologers in the Middle East, from mystic occult symbols and beliefs to secret societies, and then their reinterpretation due to colonialism. Over the course of this podcast, I hope to present the varying factors that led to certain changes or interpretation in tarot cards, as well as their cultural significance within the societies that alter them, for I do believe that a certain amount of relativism will be necessary in order to paint a broader picture, as well as to be able to place the cards into our contemporary spiritual philosophy framework. Alternating between each episode, we will also examine each of the major arcana cards, their artwork, the changing depictions of each figure, and the development of their hierarchy, i.e. the always rotating numbering system. For the lower or lesser arcana, we'll be investigating the origins of the four suits and what they have represented, their variations, as well as the inclusions and exclusions of certain core cards and their variations. Moving on from that, we are met with an instant question to begin with. What are tarot cards? Tarot cards are a deck of cards that originated in northern Italy in the mid-15th century, though there is some speculation that early designs might have come from southern France and were originally used for playing a card game similar to that of bridge, but would later be used in cartomancy. What is unique about tarot cards is they have five rather than four suits, with the fifth being the trump or major arcana, which contain artistic symbolic figures that represent either allegorical or spiritual themes, and at many times both. Typically, there are 22 of these cards, though some 16th century Italian miniature decks have as many as 40. The rest of the deck is known as pip cards or the lesser arcana. The word pip, stemming from Old French, means seed. It refers to the dots on dice or dominoes or the shapes on playing cards with numerical value. These remaining cards are separated into four suits. And while these suits will vary depending on regional development or country, generally they are swords, wands, pentacles, and cups. These cards are not fully illustrated, though there are two major exceptions to this, and look much like modern playing cards in format. There are usually 78 cards in a tarot deck, though again, this can vary widely as some early decks contain only 50 to 60 cards, where the Minacci deck contains 97 total cards. As we move further into tarot's history, we'll take a look at the occult thoughts that would be infused into the cards through esoteric groups and their philosophies. While a much more in-depth view will be taken later on, I think it's important to present them now as a general overview and as a sneak peek into what we'll be encountering later. So what do we mean by occult or esotericism? Occult is a broad term that encompasses any supernatural belief that falls outside the mainstream religious belief or acknowledged sciences. In contemporary terms, magic and mysticism are occult practices, while an esotericist practices a specific mystic ideology that falls under the occult banner. Such examples are Hermeticism, alchemy, Neoplatonism, Gnosticism, Rosicrucianism, Freemasonry, and the Kabbalah. All of these will be encountered on this journey, and as stated previously, we'll take a much deeper look into them in the future. When it comes to magic as a whole, the definition is much less easier to pin down because for most of human history, people have been practicing magic in one form or another, whether it be consulting the stars, mixing plants to cure illnesses, chanting animal sacrifice, or conjuring the dead for advice. Magic and science were identical. What can be said is magic is roughly the manipulation of the environment to gain a specific result. Within that framework, there are historically three forms of magic: natural magic, divine magic, and demonic magic. While the last one does conjure images of demons or evil spirits engaging with humans, demonic magic mainly deals with rituals that benefit only the magician performing the ritual or a spell placed on a community or an individual person with the intent of harm, such as a curse. Though demonic magic does not play a large role in the history of tarot cards, I will note that there is a tarot deck dedicated to demons called the Daemon Tarot, which is based off of demonologist Jacques Augustin Simon Collin de Plancy's book, Dictionnaire Infernal of 1863 in the 6th edition. We will discuss his history and conversion to Catholicism later on as we examine individual occultists and their influence. Lastly, while occult beliefs do play a major role in tarot's development, one phenomenon that is just as great is Egyptomania. Since ancient Greece, the Western world has had a strong fascination with Egypt, its culture, religious beliefs, and their hieroglyphics. Colonization and expansion will fuel this obsession from ancient Rome to the Renaissance to 18th century France to late 19th to early 20th century Britain and America. So great was the interest in Egypt that early marketing for Ouija boards advertised them as Egyptian talking boards. Egyptomania is a topic that will happen again and again throughout the course of this podcast. While it'd be understandable for someone to ask, why did the tarot, above all other decks of playing cards that were in circulation, come to be used for divination purposes? I believe this question doesn't strike at the core of our inquiry and exploration. After reviewing early tarot decks and their symbols, it only makes sense that the tarot would be seen and used for occult divinity purposes. Even from its inception, tarot has been used to convey symbolic ideas or beliefs. Rather, the main question we'll concern ourselves with is how did the tarot, which in the beginning used universal symbolism, come to be a reflection of the self, of the individual, and to symbolize our journey through our own spiritual paths? Where did that transition take place, and what was the catalyst? While the common perception is it was Atea and his revelations of 1770, there is some evidence that it happened a few decades earlier from an obscure manuscript from Bologna in northern Italy. Even still, history doesn't exist in a vacuum, and each turning point is always influenced, at times directly affected, by the actions that have preceded it. That is not to say the path is linear. The evolution of anything rarely is, and we shall take a look at some of those branching paths of the tarot. For this podcast, I've identified five key decks that not only were influential, but also indicate turning points in the history of the tarot. They are Visconti Sforza deck of mid-1400s, Sola Busca deck of the 1493, Tarot de Masai, the early 18th century France, the Grand Atea deck or the Book of Thoth, 1789, and the Rider-Waite-Smith deck of 1909. Notably absent from the list is Aleister Crowley's Book of Thoth deck. While many see this as being influential to modern occult groups and decks, I'm omitting it here because the deck doesn't reflect a shift in the arc of tarot's history. His role in occult and tarot history will be discussed much later on. For those wondering, it is not necessary to own the five decks I mentioned in order to understand or enjoy this history, as images are readily available online for those curious enough to look them up. But for those who've already started a tarot collection or those who would like to, the decks mentioned above are excellent historical decks to add or to begin with. As we reach the conclusion of the history of tarot cards, we are going to look at contemporary fortune-telling cards and how they are interpreted and used under the scope of our modern world. Because as we look towards the future, and as tarot cards increasingly play a larger role in the spiritual world and beliefs, there is a persistent question that keeps arising. Is the continued belief and an adherence to tarot cards a rejection of the rational material world? If so, how does that worldview play out? For now, though, we'll put that question on hold and provide an answer to that much later on. For now, I'd like to thank you for listening to this introductory episode. Next time, we'll travel back to ancient China to explore dice and the origins of playing cards. Don't forget to follow and subscribe. If you'd like to financially support the show, you can do so using the links below in the show notes. Also, don't forget to leave a review and a little note telling me how much you enjoy the podcast. If you really like the history of tarot cards, please leave a 5-star review as it helps spread the podcast further and gets more people involved. And I'll see you next time on From Gambling to Divinity, the History of the Tarot.